നീട്ടിക്കണം ദൈത്യന്റെ നമുക്കുറ ഹിക്കാഹിൻ
The blues is the blues, no matter where it comes from. In this case, from Mali, West Africa. That was the revered Ali Faka Touré with Amand Rai. Interestingly, Ali Faka Touré, who was born in a village on the banks of the Niger River in the region of Timbuktu, used to say that the music most evocative of his own traditional music in Mali was the blues. You might have heard strains of Lightnin' Hopkins and John Lee Hooker as you listened. Ali Faka Touré. This is Lee's Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Monday, October the 29th, and the East Coast, from North Carolina to New Hampshire, braces for Hurricane Sandy, a superstorm that will make landfall, they predict, by late tonight or early tomorrow. But the nation is reeling still from a political firestorm that hit last week. The Great Fault Line, of course, is America's social, political, and economic landscape, and race is the issue. With a general election a mere 8 days away, the Obama and Romney campaigns are in a dead heat, scrambling for every vote that they can get to help them across the finish line. This past week, however, marked a definitive turn in the tenor of the campaign, with the Romney camp taking an inelegant swan dive into the gutter with unprecedented vitriol and race baiting. That should trouble Americans, but in fact, it turns out it is a neat fit with a large segment of society that simply refuses to move beyond the racial codas that have shaped every aspect of life in the United States. The Romney campaign, therefore, has emerged as a case study of so-called post-racial America. And we begin a week-long analysis of that today. As we closed out the week last week, you may recall that I said to you that you should expect, as we near November the 6th, race and race-related issues to become dominant themes in the national discussion of the presidential elections. Not that it wasn't before, but it was predictable. It's not that I'm so exceptionally intuitive. It's just the logical scheme of things, and we'll get into that. It's inevitable that it would go this way. Why? Because the stakes are high, and the presidential candidates find themselves in this tight race. You will see a fierce battle mounted by, of course, not the incumbent, but the insurgent, to unseat the president by any and all means necessary. And nothing is as effective as pandering to race-based fears. Works every time. And I want to point out some examples of that today as we begin the discussion. I'll start with former Secretary of State Colin Powell announcing on the CBS Morning Show last Friday his endorsement of President Obama. Take a listen.
You know him. He was the former Secretary of State. General Colin Powell broke with the Republican Party in 2008 to endorse Barack Obama for president. He called him then a transformational figure.
The former National Security Advisor and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is with us this morning. General Powell's memoir is called It Worked for Me in Life and Leadership. General, good morning.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Nora.
Will you endorse President Obama this race?
Well, you know, I voted for him in 2008, and I plan to stick with him in 2012, and I'll be voting for he and for Vice President Joe Biden next month.
That's an endorsement of President Obama for re-election.
Yes. And let me say why. When he took over, the country was in very, very difficult straits. We were in one of the worst recessions we had seen in recent times, close to a depression. The fiscal system was collapsing. Wall Street was in chaos. We had 800,000 jobs lost in that first month of the Obama administration, and unemployment would peak a few months later at 10%. So we were in real trouble. The auto industry was collapsing, the housing industry was starting to collapse, and we were in very difficult straits. And I saw over the next several years stabilization come back in the financial community. Housing is now starting to pick up. After 4 years, it's starting to pick up. Consumer confidence is rising. And so I think generally we've come out of the dive and we're starting to gain altitude. It doesn't mean we are problem solved. There are lots of problems still out there. The unemployment rate is too high. People are still hurting in housing. But I see that we are starting to rise up. I also saw the president get us out of one war, start to get us out of a second war, and did not get us into any new wars. And finally, I think that the actions he has taken with respect to protecting us from terrorism have been very, very solid. And so I think we ought to keep on the track that we are on. With respect to Governor Romney, I have the utmost respect for him. But as I listen to what his proposals are, especially with respect to dealing with our most significant issue, the economy, it's essentially let's cut taxes and compensate for that with other things. But that compensation does not cover all of the cuts intended or the new expenses associated with defense.
You said you have listened to Governor Romney. Have you talked to Governor Romney about this? Did you give him an early notice that you plan to endorse the president again?
No, I didn't give anybody an early notice. I have spoken to Governor Romney. We had a very good conversation a few weeks back.
Did he ask you for an endorsement of him back then?
No.
And have you spoken with President Obama?
I speak to the president on a regular basis, and he didn't ask either. This is my decision based on my looking at it as a citizen. I think this is an exciting race between two very, very capable men, and I signed on for a long patrol with President Obama, and I don't think this is the time to make such a sudden change. And not only am I not comfortable with what Governor Romney is proposing for his economic plan, I have concerns about his views on foreign policy. The governor who was speaking on Monday night at the debate was saying things that were quite different than what he said earlier. So I'm not quite sure which Governor Romney we would be getting with respect to foreign policy.
What concerns do you have about Governor Romney's foreign policy?
Well, it's hard to fix it. I mean, it's a moving target. One day he has a certain strong view about staying in Afghanistan, but then on Monday night he agrees with the withdrawal. Same thing in Iraq. On almost every issue that was discussed on Monday night, Governor Romney agreed with the president with some nuances. But this is quite a different set of foreign policy views than he had earlier in the campaign. And my concern, which I've expressed previously in a public way, is that sometimes I don't sense that he has thought through these issues as thoroughly as he should have, and he gets advice from his campaign staff that he then has to adjust or modify as he goes along.
Are you concerned about the people that are advising Governor Romney?
I think there are some very, very strong neoconservative views that are presented by the governor that I have some trouble with. There are other issues as well, not just the economy and foreign policy. I'm more comfortable with President Obama and his administration when it comes to issues like, what are we going to do about climate? What are we going to do about immigration? What are we going to do about education? Lots of things like that. I do not want to see the new Obamacare plan thrown off the table. It has issues. You have to fix some things in that plan. But what I see when I look at that plan is 30 million of our fellow citizens will now be covered by insurance. And I think that's good. We're one of the few nations in the world with our size and population and wealth that does not have universal health care.
You know that the principal criticism of some about the president is they do not know how the second term would be different. And he has not laid that out, and that's some concern.
I think it is a concern. I think the president has started with the plan he issued yesterday and some interviews he's given, that he's going to focus on the economy, he's going to focus on debt. We can argue whether he should focus on debt and jobs, but they're all interlinked. I think the major problem faced either by Governor Romney or President Obama, whoever should win the election, is going to be what to do about the fiscal cliff we're about exactly. to fly over. You know, this is something that was put in place by Congress. And while we're talking about the two candidates for president, let's not forget that Congress bears a lot of the responsibility for many of the problems that we have now. They're the ones that write the appropriations bills. They're the ones that pass the legislation for more spending and for the various entitlement programs that people have trouble with. And so I think it's a close race. I think every American should look at both candidates carefully, measure them against your own personal views. I really am pleased the way the president saved the auto industry, and I think that brought a lot of jobs back to Ohio and Michigan and other parts of the Northwest.
So you blame the failure to find a grand bargain on the Congress and not on the president?
The failure to find a grand bargain. Why do we need a grand bargain? Why do we need Simpson-Bowles? This is work the Congress is supposed to be doing. You're not supposed to need special committees to come along. We have a Congress of 535 people with dozens and dozens of committees. Why can't they, up on the Hill, start talking to one another, reach across the aisle? But it will take greater presidential leadership. And I think what the president said in one of his remarks yesterday is that he intends to spend more time trying to bring that leadership up to the Hill and get both parties, both sides, to start talking to one another. But every candidate can say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But in reality, it's the Congress that actually does it or doesn't do it. And I don't think the Congress has been meeting its responsibilities.
General, you worked for several Republican presidents. Are you still a Republican?
Yes, I think I'm a Republican of more moderate mold, and that's something of a dying breed, I'm sorry to say. But, you know, the Republicans I worked for are President Reagan, President Bush, 41, the Howard Bakers of the world, people who were conservative, people who were willing to push their conservative views, but people who recognize that at the end of the day, you've got to find a basis for compromise.
But then,
compromise is how this country runs.
Are you then saying that you think you may have to leave the Republican Party if it continues in the direction that it's going?
No, I didn't say that at all, Charlie, but nice try. I said I'm a moderate Republican, and there are fewer of us. What party are you in, Charlie?
I'm an independent. General Powell, anytime you want to come and make news, please come here. We love having you here to talk about important issues because of the number of important roles you have served. So thank you very much for this.
Thank you, Charlie. I'll call you maybe.
A song in your heart, huh?
Yeah. Gail wants you to come back on set so we can all enjoy that. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. So we just heard from former Secretary of State Colin Powell, also former Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the number one military position in the United States. Now, sounds to me that he was quite clear, lucid, and extremely on target with regard to his rationale for endorsing President Obama. But John Sununu, the co-chair of Romney's campaign and the person who has been trotted out constantly to be the face of the campaign and the voice of the campaign, has a different point of view. Sununu is a former governor of New Hampshire and served as chief of staff for George H.W. Bush in 1988. Here is his view.
When you take a look at Colin Powell, you have to wonder whether that's an endorsement based on issues or whether he's got a slightly different reason for preferring President Obama.
What reason would that be?
Well, I think when you have somebody of your own race that you're proud of being president of the United States, I applaud Colin for standing with him.
That was former New Hampshire.
The president clearly demonstrated that he has absolutely no idea how the American economy functions. I wish this president would learn how to be an American.
He has no idea how the American system functions, and we shouldn't be surprised about that, because he spent his early years in Hawaii smoking something.
People saw last night, I think, was a president that revealed his incompetence, how lazy and detached he is.
Governor, I want to give you a chance to maybe take it back. Did you really mean to call Barack Obama, the president of the United States, lazy?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We're moving on. Just want you to listen, because we're going to be talking about these things. Now comes a rather interesting opinion from the inside as well, inside the Republican Party, that is. And this comes from Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who was the chief of staff to former Secretary of State Colin Powell. Here's what he has to say.
General Powell doesn't think Romney is ready for the job. As for Sununu, he's just coming off as an angry old white guy who just doesn't like diversity. Let's turn to Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, former chief of staff at the State Department during General Colin Powell's term, and is currently the Pamela Harriman visiting professor at the College of William and Mary. Colonel, great to have you with us tonight. Right to the point, what do you think of John Sununu's assessment of General Powell?
Ed, I have respect for John Sununu as a Republican, as a member of my party, but I don't have any respect for the integrity of the position that he seemed to codify. Look at me, Ed. I'm white. I'm not black. Colin Powell picked me because of the content of my character and my competence, as he did every Asian, Hispanic, white person, black person who worked for him when he was chairman and when he was Secretary of State. To say that Colin Powell would endorse President Obama because of his skin color is like saying Mother Teresa worked for profit.
Now, do you agree with General Powell's endorsement? He is endorsing the President of the United States, and he very clearly stated why. Would you go along with that? Do you agree with that?
I won't speak for him, but I will say that I thought he was rather forthright in the way he characterized it, and I agree basically with the way he characterized it. President Obama inherited a catastrophe, a failing housing market, a collapsing automobile industry, a huge debt, 800,000 jobs lost. He inherited what George W. Bush and Dick Cheney gave him. And in the 4 years, roughly, that he's been president, he has made steady improvement. He stabilized the financial system. He saved the automobile industry. He needs another 4 years in order to make more improvements, because there's still lots of improvements that need to be made, including more jobs. So let's give him 4 years rather than go to a man who is so slick that we don't even know from the primaries to now what he stands for.
Colonel Wilkerson, in the comment that John Sununu made, he said, when you look at Colin Powell, there may be some other reasons why he would support President Obama. What does this say, if anything, about the Republican Party? Isn't this getting to be somewhat of a brand of the Republican Party?
Well, on Governor Sununu's part, I think it was an unfortunate slip of words, but you're insinuating something, and you're insinuating something that is absolutely accurate. My party, unfortunately, is the bastion of those people, not all of them, but most of them, who are still basing their decisions on race. Let me just be candid. My party is full of racists, and the real reason a considerable portion of my party wants President Obama out of the White House has nothing to do with the content of his character, nothing to do with his competence as commander-in-chief and president, and everything to do with the color of his skin. And that's despicable.
What does it say about Mitt Romney to allow John Sununu to slip away with this without repercussion whatsoever?
I think it says that Mitt Romney will use any tactic whatsoever to win the White House.
Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, great to have you with us tonight on The Ed Show. I appreciate your candor so much, and thank you for visiting with us tonight.
Well, that is yet another piece of information that fits into our discussion. What have we heard so far? We heard Colin Powell deliver in a very short and concise way what he thought was what he said was his reasoning behind his endorsement. Sounds perfectly lucid to me, and he addressed major points. In fact, he sounded more like a presidential candidate than Mitt Romney did. But he was able to tick off all of these issues, the economy, the debt, how Barack Obama has handled he called it a country in very difficult straits. He describes Obama as a transformational president. Remember that phrase, because you'll hear it again very shortly. A transformational president, he says. He talks about Obama inheriting a fiscal system that was collapsing, unemployment, having to confront the housing crisis. He said, and I quote, as Secretary of State, he said he got us out of a war, did not get us into another war, and did not get us into a new war. Now, he's not talking just as Secretary of State. He's talking as Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, a professional soldier, number one military man, saying the one great thing that he credits Obama for has to do with war. Okay. And then later on, he says the number one issue in America today is not war or warfare. He says it's the economy, jobs, dealing with the debt, trying to figure out how we navigate what he calls the fiscal cliff. And it's very clear that Congress, remember I talked about it too, that it is incomprehensible that a superpower for 3 years does not have a budget. And that if fair was fair, just about everyone in Congress would be swept out. They got to go. They are incompetent. If they were professionals, they would have been brought up by now on charges of professional misconduct. And on the sharper end, this is almost treasonous to put a country in a situation where no movement, there's been no movement for 3 years. I've talked about that right here. So we are real clear about what it is Colin Powell has to say. But listen to Sununu. And this is where we need to engage, because there's a reason he's there. He actually does reflect the thinking of Governor Romney, or else Romney would not have him as his campaign co-chair. But Sununu, who, by the way, was let go from the Bush administration for using government resources for private purposes, this man uses words. These are racial coders, and he's talking to that segment of America that is a vibrant segment of America. And that segment of America cannot deal psychologically and will not accept and did not accept 4 years ago a changing of the guard at the helm. Why? Psychologically, they cannot deal with anybody of color being in charge. It is, oddly enough, the same story with Colin Powell himself. Some of the most incredible resistance came from within the armed forces against him. There were even rumors that there was a hit out on Colin Powell when he became chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Now, here's the issue. In a national race, and of course, it has now accounted for some discussion in the media, what is it? I mean, while the interviews are being held, while people are talking about, you know, this outrageous statement by Sununu, they really are not discussing how deep this sentiment is and why it is a major piece of the ammunition being used by the Romney campaign, because they know that they're connecting with a significant portion of America. They know that. How do they know that? Well, an interesting thing happened also last week. The Associated Press published a poll, and the headline says, "Majority harbor prejudice against blacks." That's the poll. I'll read some of it for you from the report filed out of their Washington bureau. Racial attitudes have not improved in the 4 years since the United States elected its first black president, an Associated Press poll finds, as a slight majority of Americans now express prejudice toward blacks, whether they recognize those feelings or not. This is significant. Meaning, there's explicit racism, the kind that you have with a Sununu, and then you have the implicit racism. The story goes on, those views could cost President Obama votes as he tries for re-election, the survey found, though the effects are mitigated by some Americans' more favorable views of blacks. Now, racial prejudice has increased slightly since 2008. Whether those feelings were measured using questions that explicitly asked respondents about racist attitudes or through an experimental test that measured implicit views toward race without asking questions about the topic directly. In all, 51% of Americans now express explicit anti-black attitudes, compared with 48% in a similar survey in 2008. When measured by an implicit racial attitudes test, the number of Americans with anti-black sentiments jumped to 56%. Up from 49% during the last presidential election. In both tests, the share of Americans expressing pro-black attitudes fell. It goes on. Most Americans expressed anti-Hispanic sentiments too. In an AP survey done in 2011, 52% of non-Hispanic whites expressed anti-Hispanic attitudes. That figure rose to 57% in the implicit test. It continues. Overall, the survey found that by virtue of racial prejudice, Obama could lose 5 percentage points off his share of the popular vote this November the 6th against Republican challenger Mitt Romney. However, Obama also stands to benefit from a 3 percentage point gain due to pro-black sentiment, researchers said. Overall, that means an estimated net loss of 2 percentage points due to anti-black attitudes. Here's the clincher. The poll finds that racial prejudice is not limited to one group of partisans. Although Republicans were more likely than Democrats to express racial prejudice in the questions measuring explicit racism, that is 79% among Republicans compared to 32% among Democrats, the implicit test found little difference between the two parties. That test showed a majority of both Democrats and Republicans held anti-black feelings, 55% of Democrats and 64% of Republicans, as did about half of political independents, 49%. Obama faced a similar situation in 2008, the survey found. You understand this? Do you see what's going on here? This is not just a political, this is not fair and square politics. Racism dictates the outcome. Racial attitudes are very, very much a part of the political process. And Romney is shoring up his success at the polls, he thinks, by pandering to racist thinking, race-based fears. Oh, they're going to come and get us. They're going to take out what we have. But it is significant that the poll says Obama faced a similar situation in 2008. Now, I will go back to 2008 and show you what the attitude was back in 2008. And I will use an interview on the show Hannity and Combs in 2008. That's on the Fox News channel. And as you know, Sean Hannity and Alan Combs were Hannity and Combs. Alan Combs, the so-called liberal part of Hannity and Combs, left at the end of 2008. It probably got to be too much for him. But here is an interview with the author of a book on the transformational president, Barack Obama, the challenges for a transformational president. Essentially, the book is called Obama's Challenge, America's Economic Crisis, and the Power of a Transformative Presidency. Remember that word? Okay. The author is Robert Kuttner, and he's invited in 2008. This is as the first Obama election, his first bid for the presidency, is in fine form. This takes place in late September, this interview. It's rather contentious, but it is extremely significant. And I want you to listen. We'll come back right after this. So here is Robert Kuttner, a guy just writing a book talking about the challenges that a president, Obama, as the first, at that time, tentative African-American president, what he is going to face. This is, I remind you, 2008, because the poll said that Obama faced the same scenario in 2008. Listen.
With the U.S. economy in turmoil, many experts believe this election will come down to voters' pocketbooks. To appeal to these voters, Barack Obama's campaign on a promise of change. At least one expert thinks that the change he's promising may not be enough. In his new book, Obama's Challenge, America's Economic Crisis, and the Power of a Transformative Presidency, author Robert Kuttner argues that it's going to take more than just charisma to lead this country out of crisis. Joining us now to talk about this, Robert Kuttner. Good to have you on our show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This idea of change, obviously, it can't just be a word. It's got to have stuff behind it. In this book, do you go into what is behind it, and does he have the goods to back up the rhetoric?
Yeah, I think if Obama's elected president, he's going to have to be a transformational president like Roosevelt was, or the economy is going to fall in on him because the economy is in such dire straits for most people.
But I guess the question is, are people really going to vote on the economy, or are they going to vote on all the stuff we're talking about day after day? Who said what? He said, she said, they said.
Right.
Look what this person did. Look how bad this person is, rather than what's really affecting
right.
the American people.
That is what is going to decide the election. If people vote on whether Sarah Palin is better at shooting a moose, the Democrats are toast. And if Obama and Biden can bring the election back to the fact that The Republicans have had their shot at experimenting and letting Wall Street go nuts, and it's really harmed ordinary people. Then the election turns on the economy and the Democrats win. So this is a fight about whether the election is about culture or about
politics. So they're really running a narrative. Republicans are running on the life of Sarah Palin. Who is she? This soccer mom has had a terrific trajectory. And you know, John McCain, war hero. They're running on narrative, and Democrats need to run on issues. That's what you're saying.
No, I think Democrats need to run on narrative. And there's a narrative of the ordinary, hardworking family just getting the short end of the stick, everything from subprime to health insurance, to your pension blowing up, to your job not being secure. And that's a narrative that affects ordinary people. If that narrative is persuasive, the Democrats win.
Right, but is Obama the guy to sell that? He's got to close the sale, which he's not yet done to the American people. How does he do that?
Well, he's intermittently closed it. I mean, I think sometimes he tries to be too high-minded. He tries to be the guy who bridges differences, who's post-partisan.
Oh, stop it. This is garbage you're spewing here.
No name-calling yet.
No, it's not name-calling. It's garbage you're spewing.
He's the guy who's trying to be idealistic, and this is a cutthroat campaign.
He's hiding who he really is. You don't hang out with Flager and Ayers and Wright for 20 years and then just say, oh, I didn't hardly know these guys. And if you want to believe that garbage, you go right ahead. You are voting for Obama, by the way. This is a pro-Obama book. You are voting for Obama.
But I'm not here to do Obama talk.
Oh, stop it.
I'm not here to be insulted either. You're doing RNC talking points.
Excuse me, I don't have RNC. These are Hannity talking points.
Oh,
I write the talking points.
Yeah, where do you get
Here's what we
from?
Have. You say, you spew this line, DNC talking points.
Any
you said the
line.
Economy.
Stop insulting me or I'm walking off
curse.
The set.
Go ahead, go. Goodbye.
Are you
going to
let me have
Leave.
My 2 minutes?
I don't care. Go right ahead. Walk off. Yeah, you said the economy's in dire straits.
Him. It is in dire straits. You want to deny that, you fool?
Sir, you fool, you idiot.
You're going to deny that the economy's
time,
in dire straits?
Sir, unemployment in this country has been lower than the last four decades. Economic growth in the last quarter was
3.3%.
It's been lower than the last four decades. Interest rates, inflation have been lower in the Bush years than they've been in the last three decades, and you are trying to convince the people of America that something is
right. Do I get a turn to talk? Go ahead. Well, if you can persuade the American people that the average family is doing great, your guy deserves to win the election. But I don't think the American people are that stupid.
Yeah, okay, so you're saying dire straits. You know what? Here's the position you Democrats are in. You got to convince the American people the surge has failed, the war is lost.
I'm talking about the economy.
Excuse me. We had record unemployment compared to the last four decades, lower than the last four decades average, 3.3% growth, and you're using the term dire. You've got to convince the American people the economy's in bad shape and the war is lost, and it's all based on a lie. That's not
Excuse
true.
Me. It's based on people's own lives. People's health insurance are going up in smoke. People's pensions are going up in smoke. People's jobs are being exported to China. Unemployment is 6.1% and rising. The administration is bailing out Wall Street because of Republican deregulation.
And we got out of the recession that Clinton Gore gave us, and we got out of the negative impact on the economy on 9/11. Now, we have made one...
If you think the economy is great, you campaign on
that. And Barack Obama wants to spend $1 trillion on new spending. $1 trillion in new government spending and nationalized health care. Is that good for the economy?
We probably need more than that.
Really?
Yeah. You talk to the average person about their insecurity of health care.
So you want the government to answer all our problems?
Well, the Secretary of the Treasury, Mr. Paulson, apparently does when it comes to bailing out Wall Street.
The same government that bankrupted Social Security? The same government that bankrupted Medicare?
Social Security is in much better shape than Citigroup or Morgan Stanley. Or if most of the banks on Wall Street were in as good a shape as Social Security, this country would be in great shape.
You're dreaming.
The election is going to turn on whether pocketbook issues trump
Sarah
Palin's
moot
story.
We also need to drill, and he's wrong on that.
All right. Okay. What we got was a pretty interesting discussion. And it sounded like they were talking about politics, but we know what was going on. This is 2008, 4 years ago, as Barack Obama mounts his first campaign for the presidency. Now, what you're hearing is what Romney is keying into on the part of Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity standing in, just like John Sununu, but articulating a same theme issue. What is at the root of all of this is that segment of America cannot and will not, it will never, ever yield to being quote, ruled, unquote, by a black person or any person of color, but especially a black person, because that has been set in concrete centuries ago. Your skin color. Now, this is President of the United States. The President of the United States is not exempt at all. In fact, this is the push and pull going on here. There is a large segment of America that psychologically cannot deal with the idea that, A, there is a black person at the helm. Just physical presence is troubling. And B, that there is any capacity for leadership, any capacity for competency, any capacity for brilliance. And it is what the Romney campaign has carefully calculated and where they're going in these last days of the campaign. They have to appeal to people on that basis. And that has been the coded message throughout this entire campaign. The coded message is, the time has come to take back, as you hear popularly said, we're going to take back America. We're going to take it back. We've lost ground. And essentially, this segment of white America is freaking out. They can't cope with it. They don't know how it happened 4 years ago. They never envisioned it happening 4 years ago. And the fact that it did happen means that all the more they have to prevent it from happening again, because it will now be another 4 years. And oh my God, look what's happening to the country. Now, you're hearing the sky is falling in one area, and you're hearing people say, you know, we are pulling through a horrible crisis. Delivered by whom? By white guys who were at the top. But as long as whiteness prevails at the helm, and that's very important, and this thing affects not just Democrats, not just Republicans, but progressives, liberals, and so forth. It is across the board. This is the racial divide. And we're looking at, staring it in the face. And they're still trying to tell us it's about politics. Well, yeah, it's about politics. Race-based politics. And here is where we're going to continue this discussion. Your calls and comments. I'll take a short break, just a very short one, because we're running close with time. But I do want to get at least one or two questions in before we go. 1-888-874-4888. 1-888-874-4888. This is where it's at.
And fresh ideas every day. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hi there, this is Harvey Wasserman. I am the host of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, which airs every Monday at 3 p.m. at PRN.FM. We cover the great issues of your health and wellness, of the health and wellness of the planet, of moving ahead towards a Solartopian, green-powered, holistic Earth. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
I'm Glenn Ford.
And I'm Nellie Bailey.
Every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, we bring you Black Agenda Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network. It's produced by the team at blackagendareport.com, the cutting-edge publication for news, commentary, and analysis from the black left.
So check out our view of the world and explore our rich archives on PRN.FM. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward. forward.
And we hope you're coming with us.
I'm a driving man.
Oh, Ali Farkatoure, you are so right to sing the blues. This is Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we're taking your calls and comments with a little bit of time, but be not afraid. We are coming back tomorrow. This is a week-long conversation we are going to be having here on the eve, on the cusp of the national election. Clay from Elizabeth, New Jersey. Welcome.
Hi, Utrice. I am in total agreement with what you just said. And it's a funny thing. I saw a program on the Discovery Channel on gold digging in, I think it was a Congo. And basically it was two white guys that went to the Congo, and basically what was holding back were the Chinese that had shotguns. And interestingly, of course, the Africans, the native Africans that were there, didn't have the means or the firepower to uphold the resources that they had at their disposal. And ultimately, I do believe that we are seeing a change of the guard, and hopefully the Chinese will lead the Africans into a certain emergence.
Well, thank you for your comment. I'm making it a little short just to accommodate as many people as we can before the hour runs out. But thank you so much, Clay, for calling. Carl from Nashville, you're on the air.
Well, I stumbled upon your show totally by accident. Did not mean to stumble upon it, but then I heard knowledge. And when I hear knowledge, I have to stop to soak it in like a sponge.
Thank you, Carl.
Here in Nashville, I call them the evil evangelical hypocrites, and those are the people that you speak of that can't fathom or understand how a black man ended up in the White House. What happened was their fellow white Americans realized that after 30-something years, they didn't get their 40 acres of trickle-down. And the one good thing that allowed me to know that President Obama is going to win a second term is that in every poll, they clearly understand who put us in the hole that we find ourselves in. They always blame George W. Bush in every poll I've ever seen over the past 4 years. To me, that's the most important poll. And they still understand to this day they haven't received their 40 acres of trickle-down, and Governor Etch-a-Sketch is offering them the same mess to get us into the mess that we were in. Simple as that.
Well, thank you very much, Carl, and I'm glad that you bumped in to us. Please do keep it here from now on.
Thank you.
All right. You see, this is what I mean about the work that progressives and liberals have to do. There should be literally a huge response from these communities if, in fact, we are as progressive and as liberal as we say. There should be a huge condemnation, open condemnation. And I'm not just talking about the media, like people on the Ed Show. I'm talking about the progressive organizations. We have Sununu calling the president lazy, incompetent. Somebody, Ann Coulter, just called him a retard. And these kinds of words that an unprecedented level of vitriol, racist vitriol. And we are not seeing organized opposition to it. And yet this is the fundamental flaw in America. It remains race. And we heard, thank goodness, a really very, very concise analysis from Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, saying, listen, he called it out. He said the vast majority of people in his party are racists. And he ought to know. But he spoke out. And we have a deafening silence in the so-called progressive world. This is not just politics. This is racial hatred disguised with political clothing. And we're not seeing or hearing an organized effort to say this is not going to be. So we are, as we travel this week, and we are going to disassemble all the moving parts of this race-based campaign and this decided turn to the ultra-right by Mitt Romney, if that's at all possible, if there's any more right left to turn, you know, we will deconstruct this, and we will deal with this this week, because this is how it happens. This is how it happens. It looks, it's being made to look like something that it is part of the democratic process. And, you know, people are passionate about politics. No, they're passionate about their racial privilege. And they're passionate about keeping the turf they believe is theirs and theirs alone. And that accounts for a significant portion of America. I didn't say so today. Alone. I see AP saying that with a scientific study. I see people in a position to know saying that. And yet, we do not have a broad acknowledgement of racism. Racism. We have an apartheid campaign. I'll stop here. I want to thank you so much for indulging me. And the room to just express this opinion, but it is the first of the series that we're going to do this week as the election date, November the 6th, approaches. Please keep vigilant, keep your eyes open, and don't be fooled. And let's deal with this subject. Thank you so much for the pleasure of your company.